Free Range Tales is a collective of adventures and stories about outdoor pursuits shared by your hosts, Jason Trossi and Adrian Lozano. Join us as we share our tales and feature guests with unique perspectives on hunting, fishing, foraging, nature, wildlife, and wild foods, and learn about our search for the highest quality sustainable ingredients we can find. On this week's episode, we discuss the difference between public and private land hunting and share our experiences hunting both. Approximately 640 million acres, about 28% of the United States, is public land held in trust for the American people by the federal government for us to access and enjoy. We cover the pros and cons of both public and private land hunting, but the biggest takeaway for us was to get out there and enjoy the resources we have. We had a lot of fun with this one and hope you do too. Thanks for listening and check us out on Instagram at Free Range Tales. And we are back on the Free Range Tales. With me, as always, my homie, Adrian Lozano.
My man, Jason. How's it going?
Good, buddy. How about yourself, dude?
Hey, another week has gone by, and I'm glad we got another episode in.
Good to be back in the studio, man. Trying to make it more of a common thing.
Yes.
And making time for it, making the effort. So we're happy to be back. And we're coming up on an important time of the year.
It's hot.
It's hot right now. Super hot. It's summer. It's the middle of summer. But what's coming up next is the fall.
Yes.
And in the fall,
a lot of things.
There's a lot of things happening in the fall. One of those things being hunting season.
Yes.
Dove kicks it off, dude. Dove, you know, usually first weekend of September, you know, right before Labor Day, usually kicks it off and gets it going. One of my favorite things to do, go down to the Imperial Valley and go down with some friends, family, whatever the case is,
Shoot and go
hunt some dove. And it's always a fun time.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers. That's right. There's a lot of cheers and going on dove hunting, actually.
You always blow right past
it. I do. I get excited.
Last episode, you had it, though.
I get excited sometimes. I can't about whatever. Sorry.
Delicious.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Delicious.
That's one of the fun things about dove hunting is it usually starts really early. Sometimes leaving at like 2 o'clock in the morning to drive down to the Imperial Valley to
Depends on how you plan your trip.
Yeah. Usually I'm last minute, just throwing
everything
together.
Some people take that extra step and go in a day early.
Get a hotel room, stay down there, do their thing.
Yeah.
But my favorite part of it is it's like good hunt. The hunt's done by 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And then
because it gets too hot.
Gets too hot. And the birds kind of settle down, get scattered all over the place, and they're gone. And the beers usually start shortly thereafter.
Yes. And then the bird cleaning and all that fun stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But it's always a good day. It always kicks off. And that's usually over the last few years for me, it's been the kickoff into hunting season. It really kind of sparks it off. It's the first one. It's the opening weekend.
Yep.
And shortly thereafter, I'm prepping and planning deer hunting.
Last year, I did not limit out. That made me a little nervous.
Me neither, man. I was a little disappointed. This year has been a good rain year, which people always say it helps with the reproduction of the birds and gets them to come and be there. So we're hoping that's the case.
We're hoping. Fingers crossed.
Actually, a kind of funny side story about dove hunting. Last year, one of my uncle has a great spot produced for my cousin and my uncle. Just year after year, we've gone there and done well with them before. So we made some plans to connect up with them to go down to this spot. And has like a citrus orchard or a grove, and the dove would all roost in this orchard, in this grove. And so like you would kind of sit there, and when the sun would come up, the birds would come out of their roost and fly out of this grove and fly right into where we were. And they were going, there was fields of like alfalfa where they would go feed. And so first thing they'd get up for breakfast, and they were met with us kind of like waiting for them. And, this past year we drove down there and we did the same thing I just was saying, where we left here, you know, it's about a 3-hour drive. We left here at like, you know, 10 PM or whatever. And we were going to crash down there in the truck for a couple hours.
Yep.
And we were driving down there, and as we were driving up to where the grove is, I'm kind of smelling, like I smell smoke, like there'd been a fire recently. And I'm like, oh, maybe the fires are, you know, maybe the farmers down there are doing some like controlled burns or, you know, whatever they're doing. And so we're driving up, and we get to the grove, and it's dark out, so you can't see anything. It's pitch black out there. And pull up, and I get out of the truck, and I'm like, man, it smells like fire right here. I'm like, this something's kind of weird. And I get out of the truck, and I look to where the grove is, And the farmer had, I don't know if he sold his property, decided to do whatever, but he burned his whole grove down. And so we were kind of like, whole plan was to hunt at this spot. It does not exist anymore. Anyway, we ended up finding some other places to go. We were driving around all night looking for new spots and, you know, finding guys already sleeping in their trucks at the spot that we were going to go to. And it was kind of an all night endeavor and ended up not sleeping at all and finding a spot at like, you know, 4:35 a.m. right before the sun was coming up.
That's the best thing, you know, like getting no sleep and then swinging a shotgun around, you know.
And then drinking beers at 9 a.m., you know, it was perfect. I loved it. It was the best day ever. Best day ever.
Freaking dove hunting.
But one of the things we wanted to talk about today, and it's kind of a debate we've been having, you know, we had, you know, drinks before and we kind of had debated this and we thought, why not? Sure. Push the record button and get into this debate a little bit.
This is going to be a good topic.
And well, what this topic is public land hunting versus ranch hunting or you know, kind of fenced hunting.
Oh, and it's not even so much a debate. It'll be a light discussion talking about both.
Yeah.
Of
them. I don't want to go to debate. That sounds too serious. It's more of a conversation.
Debate sounds like we both have a stand on one way or the other on both sides of the fence. No, I mean, the way I see it is public land. I've been hunting public land for birds and whatnot. And you know, without even knowing there were private ranches, I was hunting public land. So for birds, mostly. Yeah, pretty much mostly. And then a couple of hunts for deer. But for me, it wasn't a question. It was just, you're going to hike a lot. You're going to wake up early. You're going to have to drive a lot. You're going to have to put in the time, sleep, camp, whatever. That was just hunting to me already. Then I learned about private ranches, and here in California, I think that private ranches, like, I mean, they make sense if you're starting out in hunting and you want to get your feet wet and you want to, you know, you want to do the steps and go through the motions and actually harvest something and kind of have better odds. But it's a pretty interesting topic.
Super interesting subject. And I think, you know, kind of where it starts for me with like public lands is something that I don't know if people really appreciate the level of opportunity that public lands and the amount of public lands and the situation that we're blessed with here in the United States with having public lands.
Right.
It's land that all of us own as citizens of this country. And so it's something that, you know, whether it's the Bureau of Land Management or BLM land, you know, National Forest Service lands, you know, just like even like, you know, like national parks, which aren't necessarily, they're like preserved, you know, almost like amusement parks, but there are public land as well. And you can go there and you pay a fee to get in, but those are all public lands. And so if you were to go to other countries, they don't have that same opportunity for this open land that is, you're able to access. You can go hike, you can go hunt, you can go enjoy.
That's protected and managed and trails maintained and kept and bathrooms and stuff like that. Yeah.
There's a lot of other countries around the world that don't have that same opportunity. Right. So it's something we're blessed with, that it's areas that are preserved and natural and can't be developed, you know, and they're just going to be left as is. And so then you have access to those lands, because if it's privatized, if all that land is fenced off, somebody owns it, you can now not access it. And so that becomes an issue. And you're hearing a lot about that in other states like Wyoming, Montana, where there's almost a little battle between public and private land, even down to the side of like water and rivers.
Sure.
Which water is by nature, they call it, it's basically public access. So if you start upstream and then you happen to go through where somebody has has property lines that go up to the beach.
Sure.
You know, there's a debate like who owns that land right on the water's edge. Can I still access the river? And up there's some big debates on, no, actually the property owners are saying, no, I own the river too. You know, you can't come down here and fish, or you can't come down here and float tube or whatever you're doing, because they're saying they own it.
That's pretty crazy.
It's intense. It's super intense.
I don't think so.
The same thing goes on in like beach cities, you know, like Malibu, you know, these really, really rich people own properties that is beachfront. It's right on the sand and they don't want people accessing the beach that's in front of their house because they don't want some yahoos hanging out on the beach in front of their house. They're going, hey, I paid all this money for this beachfront property. Don't come on here. This is mine, you know? So I don't want to digress into that too much because that's a whole other topic.
Sure.
But my point being is it's a special thing to have public land that you can drive up to a trailhead, get out of your truck, and you're onto public land that's
sure.
that you can access.
Sure, hiking and,
yeah,
and,
that you and can access.
Camp and whatnot.
So it's a pretty unique thing. And then to hunt these lands, and traditionally, I'm the same way as you were stating. You know, I've done pretty much only public land hunting. And that hunting is very, very tough. You know, there's a lot of competition, a lot of pressure from other hunters, and it's huge expanse areas that are just massive, massive areas mm-hmm. where a ranch or private land would be very small and confined. And I've heard different stories from different friends that have hunted both public and private, and there's some different differences between them and how do you kind of approach it and go, you know, it is pretty interesting.
Right. Right. I've done a little bit of research on private ranch hunting because I want to get a pig. I want to get, you know, I don't know where to go here.
Yeah. In Southern California, it's pretty tough to find wild boars. They're around, but the majority of them, and that's actually the perfect place is wild pigs or boars.
I know where some are at here locally, but there are also signs up that says no hunting with even with bows.
Right.
So I don't know if it's a gray area or if it's actual for reals, because I've also heard that the rangers and the state park rangers or officers or whatever, they are having a really tough time with these, you know, pigs, these boars going through the parks and stuff and rooting everything up and eating.
Super destructive.
Yeah, very, very much so. So they were asking for people to actually start hunting them with bows, but then I see these signs up. So I really don't know where to go. I don't know the details. I need to make a couple of phone calls.
Find some areas that are that are open for pig hunting or public land areas that you can access.
Because it's like so close to where I live. It's really
I know really exactly where you're talking about. And there's a lot of that area, especially down in Southern California. There's some areas and some little like families of pigs, or I don't know if they call it a herd. I don't know what they call it, groups of pigs, but anyways.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And just to kind of to your point, actually, and I had a friend that was interested in getting into hunting and was really into like guns and target shooting and wanted to get into hunting. And so one of the first things he decided to do was to go on a private ranch pig hunt. And he went up in like the Paso Robles area, like Central California. And there's a bunch of ranches up there, and there's multiple of these ranches there. And so he was super excited. You know, he got all geared up, you know, got some camo and had, you know, got his gun all dialed in and had the yardage and knew like everything about everything. And he was like super excited and went up to this ranch and had a friend that had been there before. And so they went up there again together and, you know, paid. It's a paid service. So you're paying this guide or the ranch to access the ranch. And then there's usually guides associated with it that you're going to pay this guide.
Right.
And usually they'll clean anything or butcher anything that you're going to get as well, or anything that you
process.
They'll process it for you and butcher it into, you know, sausage, tenderloins, you know, leg, whatever you want, they'll butcher it however you want. So he was super excited about it and booked this trip. Went up there. They had nice accommodations. You know, you go up there, they have a nice cabin that's out on the ranch and they kind of tend to you. They prepare a meal for you and have everything set up. You know, you drink some beers, hanging out, catching up with your friends. It's a great time. You know, I definitely won't take away from any of that because that's a big part of the hunting, fishing, all of everything I like to do, camping, whatever. That's a big part of it. You get a campfire going, hanging out, drinking beers, talking story, getting ready for the day before or recapping the night or the day that just happened. And so, anyways, he goes out there, get up in the morning, super excited. They get in with the guide or the ranch hand to go, you know, drive him out to the hunting land where they were going to go. And they pull up and get onto the ranch. They pull up on a hill on this dirt road, and the guide gets out and says, "All right, follow me." And they walk about 100 yards up over the crest of this ridge. There's like kind of a little ridge line, and they walk over the crest of the ridge and pull out some binoculars and go, "All right, you know, in about 600 yards away, there's a bunch of pigs all feeding." He knew exactly where they were, and he walks them up over the hill and goes, "All right, pick one. You know, which one do you want?" And so they're kind of like, you know, glassing and kind of checking them out. These pigs are, you know, 500-600 yards away. And they're like, "Well, you know, I kind of like that one to the right. You know, that one's kind of big. It's got, you know, it looks like a big boar. Oh, maybe I'll take that one." And so they kind of decide. And then it's like, okay, like, let's flank them around this other side. And then they get within, you know, 300 yards, 250 yards. The guide sets up a little like pole basically, or like a tripod shooting for their gun, pole, shooting tripod shooting for rest. Them. And sets up the rest for him, kind of sets it there and says, "All right, like, find the one you want."
Jesus.
Lines it up.
Easy peasy.
Pulls the trigger. And with being out there maybe a half hour and paid thousands of dollars to be out there, you know, you pay a couple thousand dollars for this guide service for one pig, and the pig's on the ground within an hour of being out on the hunting grounds. And then what they do is they call up the guy, the processor, the butcher, throw the thing on the back of the truck. They gut it. They kind of let you watch as they gut it. And then they just throw it on the back of the truck, cart it off to the processor, which is already a prearranged guy, probably one of their buddies that is a meat processor. Ask you what kind of cuts you want. And there it is. It's done. And your hunt's done. And you've paid for a 2-day hunt, but your hunt's done within like an hour. So now you're just like, "Well, I hope I brought a lot of beer, because now I'm just hanging out." And so then the same thing, his buddy, like, you know, is like doing the same thing. And so now it's like, once you shoot, they all scatter. And then you kind of move on, and
regroup.
They have intel on where another group of pigs are on the property, and they just drive over there. And the same thing, you walk 100 yards, you find one, and then you go. And so every hunt I've been on, public land, looking for big game, been on a lot of mule deer hunts.
Yeah.
If I could walk 100 yards, like, there's moments in that hunt because I'm walking 15, 20 miles in a day looking for a spot, setting up, glassing.
Let's start using the drone.
We might be the way to go. There's moments when I'm hiking and I'm lugging my pack, my gun, all this stuff, and I'm hiking in high alpine areas, like looking like high country, backcountry, public land hunts, and I'm like hiking, and there's moments in there where I'm like, I wish I could only walk 100 yards, because you want the success so bad.
Yeah.
But when I come back, I'm not left with this like empty feeling like, well, I just walked out and shot this thing and that was it. It's like I'm in searching, I'm hunting, quote unquote, you know, right. I'm looking for
right.
whatever it is. So it's interesting, you know, it's just, pigs are a funny one because it's a big thing in California. I wouldn't know where to go to look for them. I want to do a public land boar hunt, but it's tough. There's a limited amount of space where they are.
Especially with rifle.
Yeah.
Especially with rifle. So the name for a group of pigs depends on the animal's ages.
Interesting.
Yeah. Super interesting. A group of young pigs is called a drift. So
a drift, all right.
Yeah, a drove or litter. So it's a drift, drove, or litter.
Litter makes sense. Yeah. I get it, but I like the drift. That's litter a better pigs. One. I like that, yeah.
Yeah, litter of pigs. And then groups of older pigs are called a sounder of swine.
Sounder of swine? A sounder. Interesting. I've never heard of that before. I was wondering. I didn't want to call it a herd, but it's sounder. That's what it's called.
Isn't that crazy? Sounder of swine. Yeah. A team or passel of hogs or a singular of boars. Yeah. So, yeah.
You're going to go find a sounder. So I want to find a sounder or a drift on public land.
Right.
But it's tough. And so pigs is one of the ones where I've looked at hunting, and I think I've talked to you about it before, is wanting to go out to a ranch or private land. You know, I found a couple ranches that are up in like central California, like southern northern California, you know, if that makes sense. And they are huge ranches, you know, thousands of acres, and you can do a self-guided hunt on the property. So you go out there, it's a private property, they know there's pigs out there. And they let you access it. You pay to access this land,
right.
And then you can go hunt yourself.
That'd be pretty aspect, cool,
right? It's kind of a happy medium, right?
Right.
It's a happy medium.
So you still have to put in the work and the miles and
right.
whatnot, but right. Hey, you know, there's still They're
going to be somewhere. They're in a 1,000-mile area or a 1,000-acre area. Yeah. And so you know they're there, but you have to put in the work.
You got to put in the work.
Put a stock in, find them, and then put a stock in and then try to take the animal.
I mean, I'd be down for that, I think, you know, because you still have to put in the work and you're still getting your feet wet for the first time.
Right.
Especially like for a bow.
Oh yeah, man. To bow hunt, it would be a way different thing because you want to increase your odds, right? Because you're having the odds are stacked against you bow hunting.
Exactly. And that's what I'm going for this year. I drew my tag and got my D16 tag and I'm
gonna, for mule deer, right?
For mule deer.
So you're gonna do a public land mule deer hunt in the zone called D16.
Yep. So
which is actually you put in for a premium tag and this was your second choice and
yeah.
You got it as it's an over the counter the tag, but it's a very popular over the counter tag.
Yeah. So this just like kind of assured my
spot to get one.
So I got one. So the first week of hunting season's for archery, right? I believe it's 1 week. Anyways, so I'm going to go with my bow and like a noob.
It's kind of fun because you've been, you know, slaying some arrows for a while and putting some arrows down and kind of feel pretty confident at a certain yardage, I'm sure.
I can hit the radius of a tennis ball.
It's awesome.
So
it's awesome. That's all it takes right there, man. And you could put a good solid shot, an ethical shot on an animal. And the thing is with archery and what I've kind of discovered too, is that you can use archery season to go out and you can scout basically for a rifle season. And if you get within range of an animal that you would like to take with your bow,
then you're there.
You basically just double your hunting season. Cause hunting season, like rifle season is only like 2 weeks.
Right.
So it's very short, you know, like I said before, you know, we've talked about it a million times. We both have full-time jobs, we're weekend warriors. You know, you're putting time in, maybe take a day or two off of work to get out there, but you know, your time is limited in a 2 week stretch. You know, you're trying to get out there opening day and put that weekend in. And then if you can take a day or two off of work and extend that to 4 days, you know, that's solid time out there. But, you know, at the same time, it's a lot of time and effort that goes into that. Yeah. And then if you can't take the time off of work or you just don't have that opportunity, you know, you're limited to the next weekend. And now there's been probably, you know, some of these public land zones are going to have, you know, 3,000 tags. So there's 3,000 other hunters that potentially, and not everyone goes, and not everyone goes in the same area, but there's 3,000 other people out there looking to do the same thing you are. And so it just limits the ability and the pressure and all that stuff. Yeah. So there's a lot of odds are stacked against you.
Yeah.
But to get out there and scout and to even
of course, there's so much that goes into it. The weather, the, you know, everything.
No, there's so much water into it. Yeah.
Temperature, time of year, everything.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of people that are excited about this year because there's been a heavy rain year. There's a lot of foliage.
Yes.
That foliage is kind of, it's double fold, right? It creates more feed for deer. We're talking more deer specific, but it creates more feed for the animals. But then it creates a lot more cover. Now you've got this brush that's had 8-9 months to grow and it's head high.
Thick.
Good luck finding an animal in there unless you're putting the time in your preseason scouting. So these are all kind of things that build up to public land hunting because you have to put the time in. It's all up to you to get out there and do it.
And now I'm at that also debate where I'm like, you know, the temperatures are good in the ocean and, you know, the good fish are here. And, you know, I got to do some scouting also for deer because I want to fill that tag. But, you know, I do have all season for deer and this and that, but you know,
no, you want to
fill
man.
It. You want to fill it quick.
No, it's tough, man.
I want to fill it super fast.
Bird season is going to be upon us very quickly. We had a great bird season last year. Quail. That's kind of on the tail end of, you know, the fishing season.
Yeah.
But still, you know, like it's fun, man. You got to kind of balance all that out. Yeah.
Dove, quail, pheasant, chucker, and turkey is usually what we go for.
Yeah, man. And
but
it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting debate because again, I've done primarily public land hunting.
Yes.
I've done one. I did one pheasant hunt on a private ranch. It was Comanche Hills, which is up in like kind of Sacramento area, like the Bay Delta area. And my sister's brother-in-law is a member to this hunt club. And basically what you do is you prepay. This one is like a pheasant and duck club. So you prepay for pheasant or ducks. And so you have a card that shows, you know, you paid for, you know, 15 pheasant. You paid for 20 duck.
Gotcha.
And so you can access the land. You can bring friends and family out there, and then they can work down against your card because you've prepaid for these birds. And there's little zones throughout this ranch. And this ranch it's a private area.
Yeah.
It's closed to the public. You have to access. You have to be a member to access it or know somebody that is a member to gain access to it. And then within that ranch, there's different zones. And so you go in there with a party.
Yeah.
And you say, hey, I would love to plant 10 birds, 10 pheasant today. So they take 10 pheasant, male or female, so roosters or hens, and they plant them. And these birds have been raised to be planted for hunting. And so they plant these birds throughout the ranch and you or your zone within the ranch. And you go out there and you have a dog. He had a dog. He had a beautiful German short hair pointer that was amazing, well-trained. And you go out there. And so we went out there, Amy and I, and the whole crew, my sister and Andy is the guy's name, and my sister's brother-in-law that had access. And so he let us go out there, and a rooster pheasant was planted about 20 yards away from the car. And we had no idea it was there, but you know, the dog, we let the dog out instantly in go mode. It knows it's time to work. Trots around, kind of runs around, and instantly is locked and just locked in point at a pheasant. And so it was like literally 20 yards away from where we parked the car. Like we, like, I think I even like cracked a beer and was like drinking a beer, like loading my, you know, like such a like improper way to go, but it was just like,
yeah,
you know,
private.
Yeah. Yeah. And just so like, anyway, shouldn't say that. And I retract that statement, yeah. But you know, we're like, it was like 20 yards away from like the car and the dog was locked in on a bird. And so we were like, oh dude. So he's like, all right, let's go. Like, get ready. Like, let's go. And so they were like, Amy, Jason, you guys go up to this one. And so as we're walking up, I'm like, Amy, this one's yours. You know, is if once we like flush it, like, you know, it's take a shot at it. So we walk up to this pheasant and it's hiding in this brush. The brush is kind of like knee high, kind of some of it's trampled, but it's like knee high grass, like brush. Dog's locked in on this thing. And so we walk up to the dog. And right when we get to the dog, like I see the bird and it's from, you know, it's 2 feet away from me and it's just like holding tight. Like it didn't want to fly. It was holding tight. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like there it is. And so we kind of like are looking at it and like, we're like, what are we supposed to do? And Andy's like, well, like kind of get closer to it. Like keep walking up to it. So we get super close to this thing. Now we're like a step away from it and it's still holding and it's this beautiful rooster pheasant. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like what is going on here? And so then like Amy kind of like gives it a little bump with her foot to kind of like move it. And so she bumps it. It doesn't want to go. She bumps it again. It doesn't want to go. And finally she gives it a little sturdier of a kick and the thing like takes off and flies. And it was just like, and what ended up happening when it flew, the dog was right on top of it. And Amy didn't want to put a shot in, like, cause it was kind of flying. Like we were on the top of a hill. And it flew like flat off the top of the hill and dog was running. And so the dog ended up running down the hill. And by the time like the bird and the dog had enough separation between them, it was too far away. And so she didn't get a shot off on it. But it was crazy because we literally 20 yards from the car, this bird had been planted. We walk up, had to like walk. It was almost disoriented to a certain point, like and didn't want to fly. And she had to like kick it to get it to fly. Very interesting experience. Like I think we ended up getting more. I think we had like 12 or 13 pheasant because other birds from other people's zones had flown out of their zone, flown into our zone. And then we found them, the dog found them when we just had a bunch of people to put shots on them. So great day hunting, a lot of fun. I will never take anything away from it.
Right.
A lot of fun. But the part where when we go out and hunt quail, dove, wild birds, you don't know if they're going to be there. It's just a different experience knowing that.
Well, I've hunted pheasant on private land or public land. I'm sorry. It was farmland down south. And it was like we didn't have a dog. So I was completely opposite.
Yeah, you're the dog walking around.
We were the dogs. So we just walked in a line and whatnot. And, you know, it's just tougher. It's tougher. I really, really wish I have get a good bird dog.
No, that's a whole nother subject.
That is the game changer.
Dude, that dog was amazing. It was amazing to watch it work. But, you know, to see the birds doing what they were doing the way it was compared to what we normally do
right. When
we hunt our areas that we hunt, it was a different experience.
Well, let's get into the more of the dog side of it because, let's get another beer.
Yeah, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with some more.
All right.
And we are back. The beers are full. What are you drinking today, buddy?
Well, I am about to crack a Belching Beaver Deftones collaboration. One of my favorite bands of all time. It's called Phantom Bride. It's an India Pale Ale. So an IPA. 7.1%.
Holler. Feeling it.
Yeah.
I got the same thing today.
Actually. Yeah. You're sipping on the same one. Yeah, it's a good beer. I like the band. So when I heard that they were doing a beer collaboration, I had to try it, and I was like, "Whoa!"
And Belching Beaver, man, down in Vista. I was telling you a little earlier, dude. I used to go down to Oceanside quite a bit. My mom was living down there. We'd drive down to Vista, cool little downtown area, very rustic. Belching Beaver's right there. Cool little brewery, like little area brewery restaurant. Yeah, and then they have, then right across the street, Mother Earth, who has they have a bunch of great beers too. So if you're a beer fan, Vista, California, North County, San Diego, check it out.
Mother Earth is good.
So we were talking a little bit about kind of where we wrapped up was hunting dogs.
Yeah. On dogs.
And so I was telling you the story about this private land ranch that we went on pheasant hunting, duck hunting, and sister's brother-in-law had a great, great German short-haired pointer. It was amazing to watch his dog work. I had never been with a dog that was working like that.
I'm a big fan of that dog, Jason.
It was very, very cool. German short-haired pointers. I was a big fan. I went from wanting to I have a Labrador, amazing dog, but very specific to water and would have been a great water hunting dog, like a duck hunting dog.
Duck.
Would have been amazing at it. He's got a great nose. Like we've done some fun experience with, we've clipped wings off other birds we've got, and we go hide them in the backyard and he sniffs them out like an instant, but then he just eats the whole thing, like feathers, wing, the whole thing. He eats it.
Monster.
Yeah. He's a monster for sure. So, but to watch this German short haired work was amazing. When it scented a bird,
yeah,
and locked in on a bird, it was amazing to watch. And he was on point all day long, and it would literally on point because he would lock in and just point and was 2 feet away from the bird and just would point you right to where the bird was. And all you had to do is walk up and then the bird would flush and then go. And then watching them retrieve the bird, it was next level. It was very, very cool.
Heck yeah. There's a bunch of species out there of dogs that are really, really good. Breeds, I should say species. Mm-hmm. I meant breeds. There's a lot of breeds of dogs that are very good for hunting. I'm a big fan of the German short hair.
They're
German
awesome.
Pointers.
Yeah, yeah, they were awesome.
I'm a big fan of those. Weimaraners, another one. You were showing me on.
Yeah, it's a wired haired pointing Griffon.
Yes.
And it's a funky looking dog. It's got kind of like long, scraggly hair. It's gray, brown, got some black and white spots on it.
Yeah.
Funky looking dog.
But
just a cool.
We got
cool
a lot dog. Of personality.
Oh, for sure. That's exactly.
Personality.
it's that dude that's always rocking a long beard, long hair, and just kind of like scruffy and just like always down for a party.
I have to look at me.
Always down for the party. That's that kind of puppy, dude. That's what it is. But there's a lot of cool dogs out there.
Cool looking dog.
And I've been impartial to Labs because, I've had one. He's a great dog. Wouldn't have been amazing, amazing hunting dog. Would have been really good at it. Just wasn't into it at the time. Didn't train him to be that, but he would have been really good at it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of impartial to Labs because they're just great family dogs, great dogs to have at the house. Yep. They just have that personality. They're just fun loving, love everybody you bring over. They're just that type of dog. But you know, some of these like pointers would be very neat. It'd be neat to have both, actually.
Well, I think it's kind of ideal
to have both
for you to get your bird dog when you have your lab.
Yeah. At the same time,
I think that's ideal. Call me crazy, but, I think that's going to be ideal.
I would say cause like labs are known as flushers too. Like, yeah. They kind of will flush things. So if you can get a pointer and a flusher,
there you go.
You know, you get the German short hair to point.
Well, the thing is,
and you get the lab to flush.
You also know? Have now one dog to kind of raise the other one in the beginning during puppy stages and whatnot. It kind of keeps them in check for the most part.
Yeah. My lab destroyed many kinds of furniture, many pillows, many socks, many this, many that. He destroyed
a lot. He's a monster.
He was a monster.
He's a monster. He's about a year older than my dog. I got a boxer and he does. I thought I'd read about boxers and I was like super into what they're about. And, you know, they're great with kids and they've been used for hunting. They've been used as police dogs. They've been used as even like down to like sheep dogs, like
herding and stuff.
Wow. Yeah. So I was super psyched on that. My dog does not like to swim. My dog does not like guns. The sight of a gun, I just pull it out to clean it. A shotgun, doesn't matter. Handgun, doesn't matter. Pull it out to clean it. He's gone. He checks out.
He runs away scared.
Out of the room.
See, like that's where like my lab is way different, man. Like I'll pull the like we've taken him where we go. Like we'll go like skeet shooting like out in the desert, and we'll throw pigeons, like orange pigeons out there. Shoot him, drop him, and he'll bring back the pieces. You know, he just wants to retrieve. That's all he wants to do. And so now, like, I'll pull the guns out. Like, we're going to go out and hunt. And he's not coming with us, but he sees me pull the guns out, and he freaks out. Like, cleaning the guns. He freaks out. He wants to go. It turns – like, it literally puts him in a different mindset where he wants to go. And he gets so excited. It's actually really funny. I'll have to show you. If I pull it out of the gun out of the closet, like, show you. He freaks out.
That's
like,
rad. We should get a video of that. We should post a video of that.
I've created another monster too. If I'm out cleaning fish.
Yep. I've seen this.
As soon as I pull my fillet knife out and I pull my sharpener out.
I've seen it.
He freaks out and he sits next to me like and looking at me.
I've actually seen that he wasn't even in the room and he heard the sound of your fillet knife going against the sharpener. And then he comes blazing around the corner like, I know what's up next.
Yeah, he just, I usually hook him up. I kind of will trim fish and kind of give him just little pieces here and there.
Fish skin.
A little sashimi for him. When I, especially if I barbecue fish, if you're all you dog people out there, I barbecue, I have like the skin on still. And I cook the fish skin on the barbecue, like side down. And then when I just flip it to finish like the top side of it really quickly, and then I know the fish is done, the skin peels right off of it. I'll leave it on the barbecue a little bit longer and it makes kind of a fish skin chip almost.
Yeah.
And I give them that.
Like almost a crispy
almost
chip.
Just a nice crispy, like kind of where it gets to a hardened point, not burnt, but crispy. And let it cool down and I give it to him like a potato chip and he scarfs it. It's like his favorite thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of created a monster because every time I pull out the fillet knife, he freaks out.
He knows what's up.
He's onto it. So. Anyways,
usually when you cook that fish also with the skin on, it kind of just falls off of the skin.
Yeah.
The meat. So then you can just flip that skin back over on the grill.
Exactly.
And then and then you cook the other side of it to kind of crisp it out.
Exactly.
But when you cook it just right, that meat just kind of like separates itself from the skin. It's pretty nice.
No, it's
like
amazing.
That. Man,
amazing
you're getting stuff. Me all. Oh, hungry. We just had fish tacos. You cooked me fish tacos tonight. You cooked us fish tacos.
And actually, just so we don't get away from it before we move on, but the fish tacos tonight, just breaded fish tacos, kind of fried them up.
Yeah.
But I had this idea of pairing the tacos as kind of a topping on the fish tacos would be kimchi.
Dude, it was so good.
And it was like the perfect mixture. I just figured like that cabbage that's kind of just been brined fermented. It's spicy usually.
Yep.
And it has kind of this sweetness but savoriness at the same time. And it was like the perfect pairing. I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure plenty of people do it. And I'd seen it somewhere and was inspired by it. But I was like, I want to try this. So picked up some kimchi, had some fish tacos, threw the kimchi on the fish tacos, and it was awesome. It was
great. The way I basically made two fish tacos, and one was, you know, just salsa and normal,
kind of Baja
normal
style, like
normal taco. The other one was your kimchi style, and let's just say by the time I did the kimchi one first, and then by the time I was getting ready to do the second one, I just made a kimchi taco also. Can I get the jar? So it was very, very good, Jason. You killed it. That was very good.
I pair those things up. Like I said, it's definitely not a new idea, but it was delicious for sure.
Very good. Very good.
But
going back to the dog thing, we have a
a little distracted with this.
I know. That's what we do.
It's a podcast for you. Just get a little distracted and kind of get side notes.
We almost need to keep notes on where we're at. going back to the dog thing, I know we were saying like, yeah, I want to get a bird dog before my dog, you know, passes on. And I feel like my dog is, you know, he's 10 years old, but I feel like he's got another 10 years.
Got so much life left, dude. Amazing dog.
He seems pretty young, it seems like. So I'd love to get a bird hunting dog and get him trained professionally and, you know, and do that. But that brings me to a point. We have connected with a female hunter who owns a dog that is a hunter with the dog paired up. So I'm very excited for that podcast episode. And we were supposed to already have recorded it, but we just had some scheduling issues come up and whatnot. So we're going to nail down a date and get that interview episode down, locked down. And yeah, that's going to be a good one.
I'm excited really for excited. That. Cause you know, the Working Dogs for Warriors, if you can actually, she's on Instagram. That's kind of the tag on Instagram. Yes. Is Working Dogs for Warriors. And then
she's I think affiliated with them, but
yeah. And they train dogs for veterans and give dogs to veterans. And it's a very cool humanitarian effort. And I'm super excited to get them on. And I think it's absolutely fun, man.
Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of interrelated to the hunting and hunting dogs, which we're passionate about. Yep. Maybe we can line it up, getting our dogs trained. We get some new pups, get them trained and whole deal.
I would love that.
Let's see. Well, so that should be coming to you guys pretty soon. We're excited about that.
That's in the works. That's in the works.
So that'll be super fun. Because actually, total side note, but on that ranch up Comanche Hills,
yes,
working with Andy and the German Shorthaired Pointer. So we got a bunch of pheasant when we were on that trip. And this is kind of a plus to kind of going back to the original topic, the debate about, you know, public land versus private land,
yeah,
and then doing the ranch. So on that ranch, so we got pheasant that day. And so you take all the pheasant back, they punch your card for all the birds you got, and you could trade a fresh bird for a smoked pheasant.
Oh, what?
Yes.
You didn't tell me this.
And I actually have a couple more in the freezer because I ended up trading a bunch of birds out for smoked pheasant. I was like, well, let me do half and half. I'll do half regular, half smoked.
I accept.
And so we had a family party one time, and I've been wanting to do a wild game dinner with you and the boys and everything. We got to get that together. We got to plan that out. But we did one, and we just kind of got some like cheese and like made kind of a charcuterie plate, mm-hmm, of just all the goods. Just like, you know, we took, and one of the charcuteries was this smoked pheasant. So good. It was like everyone was kind of tripping out because we, like, you know, you just, it's a full pheasant that is there. Whole, and obviously it's pheasant. just it's ready to go. And you just
whole bird,
you know, brought a knife out and just cutting like the wings off, the legs off, just the breast, the, you know, everything. And you're just getting into this bird, and it has such a good flavor to it. It's so, so delicious.
If you haven't had pheasant, it's kind of a darker meat.
Yeah.
So it's got a little bit more of a heartier flavor, heartier taste, but it's all in the preparation. It's so good.
And to have it smoked like that and to not have to smoke yourself is right.
Pheasant. See, I mean,
super good.
Everything smoked is good.
You know? We brought out some white wine, some cheese.
There you go.
And some pheasant and just, you know, I think we had some other, you know, different meats and cheeses and stuff out there too, but it was so, so good.
That smoked flavoring.
It was delicious. Yeah. Turns
everything.
It was delicious. So amazing. It was on point. And I was, that's a tick in the pro for ranch hunting, that that they had that ability. Right. You could trade it in.
Right.
You didn't have to do it. I mean, it was all prepped for you. And I think that's kind of part of the clientele, right? Is like they're prepping for that. And so they had it prepared already. So you could just trade it out. You didn't have to go home and smoke it. It was already smoked for you. You could trade a fresh one. They probably would smoke the bird that you traded to them.
They'll probably smoke cycle it, and it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'll take a fresh one. They'll smoke it in a week later. Somebody will pick that,
yeah.
that one up, or they'll trade it out. So it was a good little cycle they had.
That's
it was cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah, that's
so
pretty cool.
I've got them frozen right now. I'll have to defrost it. And
I've looked
it
up
for
a couple of,
for a meal.
I've looked and that's, I look forward to that. I'm going to make you.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
I'm going to make you hook me up with that. I've looked up a couple of, private ranches and whatnot and got the details of what their, you know, loose quoted rules and regulations mm-hmm. are and whatnot. And, it seems actually pretty feasible, to get out there in our area.
Yeah. There's one in our area in particular that I'm very interested in, and actually to do like a pig hunt out there. They've got a bunch of different game out there.
Right. Sheep and,
kind of an interesting concept too, where it's almost you pay to play, where you pay for whatever game you decide to take.
You have
the opportunity at whatever, but you yeah. pay, there's a certain dollar amount associated with each.
So you
type
have
of
like
animal.
You have to have a reservation and whatnot. So this is all like planned out, but like you said, you pay for what you get. So if you want to shoot multiple animals, like a sheep and a pig, or this species of pig and this other species of pig, you pay for that. That's what you're paying for.
Right.
So you have your reservation, and that's like
to access the
for
land.
For you to basically. Access the yeah. land and the facilities and the, you know, they have cabins, or you could set up your own camp. I think this is the more local one. This is the one, the name of it.
I can't remember the
dude,
name.
Dude, I have to look. I really can't.
It's
something with canyon in it.
Yeah, I have to look it up. And it was an interesting thing
something
because
canyon.
We had talked about it. And that's actually where this debate kind of like sprung from was
yeah.
like, you know, I think you brought it up to me and I said, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, it was kind of like, I was like, dude, how can you do that? Like, I'm all about public land, bro. Like,
because I saw a picture of a, no, I actually, where I go to get my bow, when I go shoot my bow at a target, indoor target place. And their shop, they were telling me, oh dude, you're getting into hunting. That's cool. You should, check out this kind of ranch place. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to do public land. And that topic discussion came up and he said, yeah, this is just nice to get your feet wet. And you know, if it's the first time you ever done it, it's really nice to get that close. And there's a lot and you know, it's kind of nice. So
Bighorn Canyon Ranch.
There you go. Bighorn Canyon.
Bighorn Canyon Ranch. And so you can get
canyon,
a bunch of different things out there. And, you know, it sounds kind of interesting because there's exotic animals out there that aren't natural to.
Well, they publish a bunch on their website, but I don't know if that's what they have all year round or.
Right, right.
It can't be.
No, it's an interesting thing. You know, it's that's kind of, you know, and I'm torn on that because it's kind of interesting because. It's a pay to play type thing. It's not just pulling a tag, you know, like you normally would for big game hunting and going out onto things that are in their natural environment.
Right.
It's something that is an animal that is out there. And I'm not opposed to going out and trying a ranch hunt that's self-guided. I think that's a happy compromise for me that I would be interested
in.
Well,
let's try to compare it to charter boat.
Right. Fair enough.
Let's just say you don't have the means to go and get these types of pigs. So you have to go to a private ranch where they do stock these pigs. You know, well, what about a boat? Yeah, you want to go sport fishing. You don't have a boat. What are you going to do? You have to pay someone
You're going to hire a charter boat that knows where the fish are.
That has a good captain that knows where the fish are, has been out there day after day or every other day. Knows where the fish are, is well connected, and is going to put you on the fish.
Right.
And then it's up to you if you have the right gear and the bait and everything else comes together. So with that said, I mean, I think it's comparable.
And I don't disagree, but the thing that I would say is like you can still hire a guide that knows public land and has scouted the public land.
They're not that common. I'm sorry, dude. I'm going to Google search that right now.
You should, man. You should, because
Southern California public land guide.
I will give a shout out to one that I actually was thinking about hiring is Kika Worldwide.
All right.
Ex-professional skater Jeff Raleigh owns it, and I thought about hiring them actually and wanted to reach out to them. And they do public land guided trips where it's public land. You pull a tag for a certain zone and you can hire them to take you out to do that. But the thing is that because that's their job,
yeah,
they have scouted the area and that's what they do. That's what you're paying them for, is they know where the animals are. And actually have some experience with a family friend that's a pretty avid hunter. He's an older guy, pretty wealthy guy, has done well for himself. He's older. And he has, what he's done is he knows these guides in certain areas and goes on these very, not exotic game, but just very high-end game. Like he's gone on bear hunts, you know, sheep hunts, different things, pig hunts, just random things throughout the states and globally. And he knows guides and he contacts them and says, hey, I'm interested in X. You know, I'm interested in this type of species.
But that's got to be so pricey.
Oh, it's ridiculous the amount of money that this guy spends, but it's his passion. He has the means, you know, it's a different thing. And that's what I'm kind of saying is where public land over-the-counter tags are very blue collar. And I mean that in the most respectful way. You're going to have to work for it. Whereas somebody, you can hire a guide to take you out public land. And that's where I kind of draw the analogy of sport fishing or hiring a guide or a charter service.
Yeah.
Because it's still the ocean. You don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
But those guys have that network that they know where the game is. They know where the fish is because they're talking to the other captains that the guy was out there yesterday. He put a bunch of fish on the boat. They have built the relationship with him. He says, hey, I'm heading out there Thursday. You know, what did you guys see out there yesterday? Hey,
right.
I saw them here. I think they're going to be moving here. The currents are doing this.
Right.
The sea temperatures are doing this. So they have the information. You hire a big game hunting guide. He's putting in the time scouting all year long. And he knows, hey, I saw this herd moving here. I saw this animal is something you may be interested in as a clientele.
At this time, they bed down.
I have glass on it right now.
That's wild.
And I've heard of guys even, they have sat phones, like the satellite phones. They'll be out in the field. They'll call you as a prospective client. You're saying, hey, I want to get a desert bighorn sheep. Super, super unique, once-in-a-lifetime animal, once-in-a-lifetime tag to pull. And if you have enough money, you can buy that tag. You know, you can buy it. Like you can bid for this tag. And so there's been guys that have paid for this tag for a bighorn desert sheep. And you basically go out, you pay for it, you hire a guide. That guide goes and finds an animal that he thinks you're going to be interested in and goes, hey, I've got one that you're going to think. They can send you pictures while they're in the field.
Oh, wow.
And then you can go, yeah, that's actually what I want. The guide stays on that animal.
Almost real time, yeah.
And then you, as the client, then leave work, take two vacation days. You drive out to wherever they are. You fly out to wherever they are because they have eyes on that animal. They stay on that animal the whole time. They bed it. Next morning, they get up, glass it, follow it all day long. You get out there. They have glass on it all day long. One guide takes you out to the guide that has glass on it, sits you down next to him, goes, all right, is this something you're interested in?
There it is.
Yep, there it is. So it's interesting. I mean, it happens on public land too. So it's a very interesting thing.
Yeah.
And so to your point, like hiring a guide is very, I've always been anti, but the more years that go by that I've had unsuccessful hunts, the more interested I am in hiring a guide because I'm like, dude, I want to be successful. I want to know because this, and we've talked about this a million times before, this wasn't something I grew up doing or had anybody Correct. Show me. I'm Correct. Learning myself.
We're learning
and
as
I'm
we go.
I'm teaching myself how to do this. Yeah. And so, you know, whatever, man. I'm trying to figure it out.
No, Instagram teaching you, dude. YouTube teaches you, dude.
Exactly, man. That's my mentors, Instagram and Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, whatever, dude. I'm watching it. So anyways, you know, it's very interesting, man. There's a lot out there, dude.
I mean, I think it's a great discussion. like I said, we shouldn't even call it a debate because it's not a debate. It's just two different things, and they complete the same goal, you know.
Ah, so at the end of the day, for sure, man.
It's just one costs one way and one costs another, which is blood, sweat, tears, and money.
And I think at the end of the day, for us both, you know, it's connecting to the food that you're eating.
Correct.
And so, like, correct, you're putting yourself in that process. I think at the end of the day, that's the biggest takeaway for me, is that I'm connecting to the food I am eating. I know exactly where that thing came from.
And here's the thing. If you were to compare it again, I compare it to fishing, and I spear fish. So I go out and hunt it. You know, it feels so good to like fight that fish, put it on my belt, get it on the boat, whatever, whatever. Process it correctly. All of that makes the fish taste better. And then I think about if I were to just like pay for that to be spearfished for me, I would spend the extra money because then I didn't. So that's comparative to the ranch hunting. So you're basically paying the guide more.
For sure.
You know, or guide hunting. You're paying for that to be done for you.
Right. I agree.
And I, as the years go on, dude, I might be, you know,
that's what
it sounds,
you know,
more appealing.
Like I said, I have a family friend that is,
but I love doing it myself.
It's tough, man. It's tough. And I always say I've got enough piss and vinegar in me to go out there and try the public land thing and do it all on my own and learn the process. Well,
we're doing it.
I've done it the last multiple years. I've put in for tags. I've got been lucky enough to get premium tags. I've done over-the-counter tags. This year, I didn't get my premium tag. I put in for a really good zone. And we've talked about it before, but the difference between a premium zone and an over-the-counter zone is that premium zone, they limit the amount of tags that are released for that zone. So you have to apply for it. It's on a done by a luck of the draw. If you don't get the draw, then you are resorted to an over-the-counter tag. Over-the-counter tag, it's open to basically the general public. So you can buy them. There's more of them. Those zones are more pressured. There's less game. Not only say there's less game there, but there's less pressured. Odds. Yeah. There's less odds.
Yes.
The more premium zones that you get, the higher the odds of taking an animal is.
Correct.
And so, you know, the zone I applied for is a very, very high probability zone.
High pressure.
It's super high pressured. As far as it's highly impacted because a lot of guys apply for that zone because the rate of success is so high
and easily accessed.
Yeah, correct. And then so the zone that I ended up getting was a public zone that has, you know, 3,000, 4,000 tags that are released for it.
Give it here.
It's going to be some tough hunting, man.
Give it here.
We're going to be trying it out, dude.
So, I mean, I'm just looking forward to it.
It's going to be a fun season, dude. Well, I tell you what, dude, I'm going to put this on wax right now. We're going to put it into the world. We're going to speak it into existence. We need to go out and do one of these private land pig hunts.
Let's do it.
And just try it out. See how it goes. Try it out. We'll come back. We'll talk about it after the fact.
Talk about the recipes too.
Oh, well, you know, you're that confident that you're going to get an animal.
Oh, I'm already tasting it.
You're going to talk about the recipes of it. Well, I'm hoping that that's get to come back this year. We have deer tags in different zones, both public land, over the counter zones. So we're probably going to end up splitting up. Maybe we can kind of maybe combo some weekends and, you know, I can be some glass for you in one zone. You can be a glass for me in another zone.
Your wife has a good deer tag.
She does. She has a tag for the same zone you do, actually. So.
Exactly.
I'll probably end up there. I'm not going to use my tag. I'm going to end up in that.
You're just going to put in for, just go get an over the counter for us if they
have it. It's already, I don't know, man. If they have any available still, I may have to buy another one and be down there with you guys. I don't know,
man. Amy and I are going to knock it out. We're just going to like straight up like, dude. Oh, hey, you want the one on the left? No.
I'll take the one on the right. The one on the right?
Yeah, take that one. Let's crisscross. Yeah, it's going
to
be sick.
It's going to be fun, man. I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, in about a month from now, it's the beginning of August. In a month from now, dove season is always the thing that kicks it off and it goes.
Yep.
We're going to get out there. We're going to do it. We got plenty of other trips coming up. We're going to Baja in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Definitely going to get some content out of that. So look forward to that.
I got
to
make room in the freezer.
We're going to get after it, dude. It's going to be really fun, man.
I can't wait. I'm going to have to buy another freezer.
Let's do it, man.
Anna's been telling me.
Just do it.
Just get another freezer already. You've
got the blessings from your wife, dude. It's time to do it. You got
to
do it.
It's time to get another freezer. Then I have to fill it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Then I have to fill it.
Let's do it.
It's on. Well, I guess let's wrap it up. I don't know.
Yeah, cheers, brother. We're looking forward to it. Like I said, we're going to get some interviews lined up. Got some fun ones coming for you. But
yes, I'm very excited for the interviews coming up.
The love coming. We appreciate you guys. Check us out. Instagram, Free Range Tales.
Yeah, Jason Tarazzi.
Jason. Adrian Lozano, bro.
Let's keep doing this.
Cheers, brother.
All right.
Peace. Free Range Tales. Check us. Wreck it. Peace.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Free Range Tales podcast. We're having fun reliving some of our stories and hope you guys are too. Leave us a comment and let us know what you think. Also, check us out on Instagram @FreeRangeTales. Thanks for listening. We'll check you next time.